key here is collaboration. We've never experienced a challenge of this scale before in any industry. And therefore, in order to achieve this, we need to collaborate. And that's difficult because we know how organizations operate in silos. We know how sectors operate in silos, and we know how nations do. This is going to be a huge challenge. And that's where let's start collaborating, I think, is the key piece, really, to just reinforce from the discussion.
Well, welcome, or of course, welcome back if you're one of our regular listeners, and if not, delighted you could find us. Matthew Grant here, CEO of Instech, and I'm talking to you the day after we held another one of our really lively evening events here in London. Over 200 people joined us late yesterday afternoon, and we heard from a whole collection of risk managers about what they want from insurers and brokers, both in coverage, risk protection, but also technology as well. And as much as you'll love insurance, it's really refreshing to hear from the end client, particularly when they've got really large, complicated risks like billion-dollar data centers to insure and reputational risk associated with things like the Olympics. Well, on a similar vein, you've also got a really good discussion coming out with Christine Brogan and Chris Temple from PwC. They're talking about different industries as well, in this case, how those industries are managing their commitments to reduce carbon, as well as some of the broader ESG strategies, and in particular, what is motivating boards and CEOs today. A lot to learn here for all of us from a whole lot of different perspectives. I know you're going to enjoy this one. Chris, Christine, great to be talking to you. Everybody knows, I'm pretty sure, or aware of PwC. We're going to talk a bit about what you two are doing specifically. But as you've got listeners around the world, it's always great to know where you are. Chris, I think you're on the edge of a golf course somewhere. Are you in the middle of England?
I am indeed, yes. I'm in Crewe this morning, sat on the edge of a golf course at a hotel and conference centre. Sadly, I'm not a golfer, but I am here with a bunch of golfers who are all itching to get on the course. Sadly, we've got a day of meetings ahead of us, so I don't think they're going to get that luxury.
Well, don't worry. Every time I get on a golf course, people tell me I'm not a golfer, so I know how it feels. Christine, how about you? Is somewhere exotic?
I'm afraid I'm not in such an exotic location, no. I'm in London today.
Well, just across the road from us. So we're going to talk about ESG. Chris, you've got a pretty significant responsibility at PwC. In just a few words, could you just sort of explain what ultimately are you responsible for with the organisation?
Delighted to, Matthew, yes. So I'm our global net zero leader for PwC, and essentially that's helping our clients reach their net zero targets, be it setting those targets and also achieving them. And that's through the likes of baselining, it's setting strategic direction, it's designing implementation plans, but most importantly, it's about implementing those plans as they move forward towards their net zero targets. My interest came about 10 years ago, actually. I have had some young daughters at the time. I've still got young daughters, but they're a bit older now. And a lot of our conversation was focused on climate and how they and we could make a change. And this coupled with my roughly 25 years of strategy consulting experience focused on the built environment and the construction sector, essentially these two points came together. Bearing in mind that the construction sector is a high emitter of both embodied and operational carbon. And as a result, I've developed both a personal interest and also a commercial interest in net zero.
Brilliant. Well, one of the things is I know we're going to be really interested today is we're going to be talking about insurance, but beyond insurance. And those of us who spend too much time in insurance really are interested in knowing what's going on around the world. And Chris, you've got our first ESG-specific jargon there, baseline. I'll come back and ask you about that in a minute. But Christine, what about you? So you've got a more of an insurance focus to your role, I believe.
Yes, that's correct. So I'm the UK insurance ESG lead for PwC. And similar to Chris, I'd spent the majority of my career, sort of over 15 years in the insurance sector, working on large-scale transformation projects with insurers. And about 10 years ago, I started to take an interest in sustainability and actually went on a secondment from the firm to work with the then Prince of Wales on a project which was around accounting for sustainability, which looked at finance's role in sustainability specifically, both in terms of the sort of CFO agenda, but also the broader investment chain, pension funds, etc. And I just really enjoyed the complexity of the problem. It's just so much more complex when you look at the whole value chain and the level of effort and change that is required to support and build resilient business models. I was fascinated by it and have been working in this space ever since.
Great. Well, we've got quite a lot to cover. You've got a fantastic report that's also going to help people to understand a little bit of this, and it's got some really good data that we're going to be referring to. I mean, the way I'm thinking about this is for somebody
listening is to really start to get beneath some of the kind of broader concepts, but understand what is really going on, and particularly, you know, what can they do individually, and Chris, putting back to your own personal experience. So when you talk to your clients, what are a couple of the main priorities that they have for their business to be successful in the next, let's talk about the next 12 months, first of all, and maybe expand it beyond that as we go.
Yeah, sure. So every year we release a survey asking our CEO clients what they're seeing in the market and their perspective on the key challenges and opportunities for the year ahead. And the results this year in particular are really quite interesting. Faced by disruption in the macroeconomic climate, alongside changing customer sentiment and reduced discretionary spending, CEOs are actually looking for alternative avenues for growth than perhaps they have done historically. Many are not expecting a challenging UK economy or even a global economy to offer that real organic uplift. And instead, we're finding they're looking internally and investing in organisation-wide transformational change programmes, including cost reduction, of course, that balance their commercial needs and strategy with the public commitments themselves towards climate and trust.
So Christine, from an insurance perspective, we've heard from Chris at kind of high level in there, but what are your insurance clients telling you about where they need help?
So I think from a broader perspective, insurers have got a huge amount of pressure to transform and adapt. I think it's fair to say that technology has been underinvested in the last 10 to 15 years in insurance, and therefore was having a lot of conversations around digital transformation that's required, digitally enabled claims transformation, how they support the growth of the business, and then also AI and regulatory reporting and sustainability obviously fits in with that, as well as the broader net zero commitments. I think it's really interesting that last year we ran a survey with insurance CEOs, and 37% of them said that their current business wouldn't be economically viable in 10 years if they carried on as they are. So that starts to give a sense of how much sort of the, you know, sustainability is going to keep ratcheting up that priority list as we go forward now into the medium term.
If I was to ask you to list one of the four requirements that you covered in there that is the most critical, I mean, I've got my preferred one, but is there one you think is going to have the most impact in the short term in terms of what people can be doing?
Well, I think whilst it's fairly new as a topic, I think AI has a potential to sort of have a fundamental impact on the sector if it's used in the right way. So I'm hopeful that that will help to alleviate some of the challenges that our insurance clients face. And obviously that can support the sustainability agenda as well. So I think that's a key one for organisations to look into and try to get right.
Yeah, I like that. But I also really like the fact you were talking about identifying and implementing clear data strategy and KPIs. I mean, we all know the classic phrase, if you can't measure it, you can't change it, or you can't manage it. And that to me just seems really important in terms of how people can make a difference here, is really tracking in a slightly abstract world how you measure it.
And I think, if you don't mind me sort of adding to that, we did some benchmarking recently across the insurance landscape to see around the levels of progression in sustainability. And what we could see, it was really clear that the life insurance sector is much further ahead. In most cases, in terms of baselining, understanding the level of financed emissions or insured emissions that the organisation has, that has been covered by a number of the life insurers. And they've also developed detailed transition plans, which starts to take you from that strategy and planning through into action. And I think it's a really helpful way for businesses to understand the challenges that they're facing over the medium term as well. So that's definitely something that's also on the agenda of organisations. And that maturity is definitely there in the life insurance sector.
Well, look, everything sounds really positive. So Chris, it sounds like you're on a mission, you're convincing your clients. How's it all going? Are they all now focused on ESG, and we're going to see some fantastic changes coming over the next couple of years? We move to decarbonisation?
I'd hope so, but there are a few stumbling blocks in the way at the moment. And I think in their minds, balancing the commercial gain and progress in next area is a hard act for many of the business leaders to actually follow at the moment. There's a lot of alternative pressures coming up against in their minds. And I think an example of this, we did an energy survey, which we've actually just released. We're actually seeing that higher energy costs are not generally driving organisations to reduce their energy usage. And instead, actually, they're looking into options to improve energy efficiency through other means. And actually, emissions and energy costs are seen as competing priorities by businesses at the moment. And around 60% of those surveyed in this report said that their environmental commitments have made it harder to mitigate high energy costs at the moment. So again, there's actually a long way to go with other pressures which are really causing greater issues in business than just pure net zero commitments and zero carbon approaches going forward.
Yeah, it was a slightly provocative question, in fairness, because somebody is saying that people who are organizing conferences these days around climate are actually seeing less people attend. And I mean, that is the problem, isn't it? In our daily lives, we tend to react and be driven by either cost pressures, although I guess the one bright light, not everyone might agree, but the regulation is driving this as well. We might come back and talk about that. Chris, but before we go on to sort of talking about some of the barriers, we do need to get an understanding of what baseline is. So I'll let whichever one of you wants to just give a quick definition of what baseline means, and we'll come back to some of the challenges.
I'm happy to have a go. And Christine, I'm sure you've got additional views here. So essentially, baselining is trying to ascertain any business's current carbon output. So what is it producing in terms of carbon from any of its operations, be they offices, be they plants? It could also be their supply chain as well. So we discussed scopes 1, 2, and 3. Scopes 1 and 2 are essentially the energy and carbon that are being produced within the business. But then scope 3 is the carbon that's being produced within the supply chain that's supplying into the business. And so in order to understand whether you're reducing carbon going forward, you need to understand what level your carbon output is at the moment. And essentially that's what baselining is. It's not that straightforward, because businesses themselves might well have a reasonable understanding of their own carbon output, but it then needs to be pulled into one place and then monitored to form that baseline. But then secondly, trying to understand the carbon output of the scope 3, so the suppliers into an organization, is actually incredibly difficult.
Yes, Chris, I completely agree. I think the scope 3 is really important for insurers. When we look at the sort of operational emissions and the supply chain, that is fairly immaterial when it comes to the insurers. And we are seeing more progress on that and linking in the cost piece as well, and how you can actually transform your supply chain and then add emissions in and support that. But the real emissions in insurance are financed emissions and insured associated emissions. And it's really important because it helps organizations to understand the exposure of different product lines. And in particular, answering the question about what will my future balance sheet look like? How do I help my business to transition? What different decisions do we need to be making at a board level? So it's really important that organizations understand that current baseline to support the challenging decisions ahead.
Yeah, I mean, as we look across the insurers, to me, that's one of the most fascinating areas, and seeing companies that are trying to help with the scope 3, because it's so difficult to really understand that. I mean, it's difficult for companies themselves to understand. It's even harder when you're an insurer and you're actually underwriting your client's business. So I'm really interested to talk more about that. But Chris, I want to come back to you. I mentioned that point there about regulators. There's all sorts of stakeholders that are lobbying for ESG, including your daughters. How's that working out for the companies now? Is that a coalition of the willing that's putting momentum behind the CEOs now to move forward on this?
I'll perhaps take a step back. I think in the COVID years and immediately afterwards, this was a much greater issue. And that's really what brought the whole ESG and sustainability agenda right to the fore. That said, I think interest has temporarily waned. And then I sense that between about 2025 and 2035 and beyond, this will become a much greater issue. And therefore, organizations will essentially refocus on it. And I think one of the barriers at the moment is a real lack of demand from external stakeholders for organizations. And in fact, going back to our CEO survey, this highlighted as a reason the slowdown is actually towards the climate commitments from 40% of UK CEOs, who essentially said it was no longer the kind of top of their agenda. Although more organisations are certainly aiming to be carbon neutral by, let's say, 2030, 2035, depending on what their target is. But even taking 2030, that's 6 years away. And for many organisations at the moment, they've got much more pressing challenges. For example, not falling behind competitors on the adoption of Gen AI is probably far more important to them. And tellingly, more than 3/4 of the CEOs we surveyed that said that they will be investing in cloud infrastructure, data and AI this year. I say that on a more positive note, lack of buy-in from the management teams or boardrooms is seen as much less of a blocker. And actually in the main around the boardroom table, this is seen as being important. And actually a cultural shift at the leadership level has already happened. But then committing that into action is probably the more difficult thing for them at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Chris, in terms of the level of priority. And I think the level of progress in insurance in particular is driven by the subsector of insurance, the product lines. And then you've got the timeframes in which the risk is being underwritten. But I think the current sort of geographical and political climate is playing a huge part here. when it comes to that external pressure. I think the key external pressure has come from the regulators, to be honest with you. And I think that, you know, there are more disclosures than there ever have been before. And there's a clear sign from investors that they want to see more comparability, consistency, and clarity across the disclosure suite. But when it comes to clients and their interactions with the insurers and the role of the brokers, that's where I expect there to be more action in the medium term. And that probably isn't quite where it needs to be on that collaboration that's required to support decarbonisation.
You know, there's two things in there I just want to pick out that I completely agree with. So one is that point about regulation, which I mentioned before. I believe the biggest driver of innovation actually is regulation. It comes back to your point, Chris, that people ultimately are driven by the numbers and what's right in front of them, or the threat, you know, if it's generative AI. So regulation is clearly going to drive this. And then you also mentioned in there, Christine, about consistent standards and measurements. And that is another area. And that again, to your point, if you can't get consistency, really hard to measure company against company. And actually also really hard to measure where somebody is this year versus last year, if they've changed the goalposts on that. I think we are going to see a convergence towards companies that are being seen as the industry standards for measurement.
I think on that specifically, leading organizations are not waiting for some of the standards to become more mature before they get started, because they understand the complexity of the challenge. And actually, that's where value chain collaboration and collaboration with standard setters can be really helpful in doing it, and actually getting comfort in maybe just being able to create comparability within your own organization year on year is a starting point before the rest of the industry comes into place. To the right place where then you can get the comparability across organizations. And that's definitely a key characteristic of a leader in the insurance sector, from what I can see.
Yeah. So going back to the point about the investment in Gen AI vis-a-vis, let's call it sustainability at large, there's a couple of examples I can pose, but both within the tech sector and broad tech sector at that. The first off is where actually this an organization which is very, very focused on the development of Gen AI uses it in its day-to-day business. Actually, that's where all the investment is going within that business. And in that case, the CSO, Chief Sustainability Officer, that person has essentially been taken off the board and moved down a level and is now reporting into the Chief Operating Officer. That's very different to where that person was 12 months ago. An example of where actually right currently now, it's sustainability does not appear to be quite such a hot topic and priority for that business as perhaps it was 12 or 18 months ago. A second example where another organization, which is again allied to the tech sector, they've done their baselining, they've carried out the strategy assessment, they've essentially got an implementation roadmap ready to go on net zero in particular, but actually are now questioning where the funding will come from and how to go about that implementation. So again, it's almost stalled and lost a bit of momentum. And in that case, it appears to be on the board's agenda every 3+ months, whereas in those organizations, particularly perhaps more in this sort of industrial space within the FTSE 100, it's on the agenda every single month because there's a real need and desire to decarbonize. So there is a kind of sectoral play and sectoral question there as to whether actually it does depend on the sector the business is focused on as to how the agenda of this particular topic is.
And it was disappointing from an insurance perspective to see the fact that the Net Zero Insurance Alliance basically had to unwind because of political pressures in the US. We had an example there of insurers not getting political, trying to collaborate to do the right thing. But I mean, the spirit is still there. To your point, Chris, it's always great to hear what's happening outside of the square mile of insurance, given that insurers ultimately are insuring their clients. So can you just keep going with your point there about what's happening maybe outside of insurance world, and maybe who should we look to as the leading sectors in this area of really getting through some of the challenges you said and really making this, you're both a priority from the point of view of branding and positioning, but actually fundamentally about how they actually run the business and ultimately it's successful in running the business.
Yeah, certainly. We see most of the opportunity at the moment for us in helping organizations decarbonize. It tends to be in the, what I classify as the retail consumer industrial space. So those that are genuinely producing a physical product, be that a product that's potentially consumed by one of us on this call, or it's more of a business-to-business style product that's then consumed by another business itself. These tend to be the larger carbon emitters, so arguably they've got the bigger problems. So on one end of the spectrum, you might have a cement works or a steel organization. We see lots of opportunity to help those organizations decarbonize, mostly because they appear to be in quite a sticky situation, that they realize they're producing a lot of carbon, but don't necessarily know what to do in terms of how to reduce that carbon quickly. I think at the other end of the spectrum, again, within those more hot sectors, we're seeing a lot of opportunity around circularity, and in particular, you know, take packaging, and maybe it's plastic packaging, maybe glass packaging, maybe paper and cardboard packaging. Any opportunity to provide circularity around that? And what I mean by circularity is that the packaging that the product is prepared and shipped in is then recycled and taken back to the manufacturing site to be then reused again. And again, massive opportunity for decarbonisation as a result. So those are some of the sort of hotter sectors we see it in. As you move towards, more office-based style sectors, and potentially I'll include the financial services sector within that, actually, yes, there's a decarbonisation issue, but it's being pushed down the road perhaps more than it is in some of those more product-producing sectors, as I describe.
I think some of this as well in the retailers, they've been experiencing supply chain challenges related to sustainability for over 10 years, and therefore they are more progressed because it's actually been already impacting their business. And another specific example sector would be the utilities. And one really interesting piece here is around the planning timeframes. So if you look at the water sector, they have to do their plans on a 25-year basis, which forces them to think longer term and the risks that their business is exposed to. In the financial sector, we're still working on a much shorter planning timeframe. And that does then impact the way that the board and the decisions are made around investment and around understanding those commercial impacts for the medium and longer term.
I mean, I think reflecting on financial services, to some extent, if you're just desk-based these days, as you see pre-COVID to post-COVID, we're much more paperless anyway. We're based in the City of London, you're walking around everywhere. So I suspect it's actually, there's less levers you can pull other than, I suppose, influencing your own supply chain on what they can do versus your big, heavy industrial emitters.
I just got a thought Matthew. Yes, I agree with that. Although the clients that are served by the FS sector is probably the big opportunity. And again, I'm no FS financial services expert, but taking banking and lending, for example, so essentially rates which are charged to greater carbon emitters or people who are not suggesting a net zero journey could be higher than those who are suggesting a decent net zero journey and or a lower carbon emitters. And likewise, you could play the same argument in the insurance industry, whereby renewals could be higher for those which essentially are not demonstrating the net zero journey vis-a-vis those that are. So just a thought as to how the financial services sector can actually influence the journey towards net zero.
Chris, I know you've got some thoughts around how companies can take actions, and I suspect this is going to be in your report so people don't have to write down all of these in one go, but it'd be great to just get your advice for organisations. How should they think about a framework to tackle this?
Yeah, certainly. We conducted some research middle of 2023, late 2023, on how the FTSE 100 in particular was essentially responding to the sustainability agenda, and actually found some, in our view, some very interesting results there. Most of the FTSE 100 have started their journey towards net zero, as you might hope, with the vast majority hitting their what you might call easy quick wins of aligning the likes of internal processes, governance, and reporting mechanisms to sustainability objectives. However, there's a massive gap between those that are performing well on this and those that are performing less well. And as a result of that, there's a clear opportunity for many of them to be doing more and actually to be producing and putting in place key initiatives that move beyond intentions and much more towards tangible results. So we summarise this in five key drivers change that can trigger a mindset shift and unlock progress. These focus on the likes of governance, targets and planning, data and reporting, remuneration, and wider incentivisation. So just taking a couple of these, which I think would be interesting to debate, introducing a strong governance structure doesn't necessarily require significant financial investment. Going back to my cost pressure points of earlier, it's often the first step to embedding net zero transformation within day-to-day operations. Interestingly, remuneration by comparison is also a strong mechanism to drive accountability for climate commitments. And currently we're seeing that the top performers are linking up to 30% of their reward to climate targets, which I think is a great start even within that journey.
That last point is really interesting in terms of remuneration. Can you sort of give an example about how that might be linked to an individual? I'm guessing it's individual or if it's a business unit, but specifically do X get paid plus or minus Y depending on the outcome?
Yeah, exactly that. And it really needs to be linked to the most senior person in the organization's remuneration. So it needs to be linked to the chief execs and then flow down to each of the business leaders and operational leaders. So the example I'd give is that, yes, it needs to be in place, but it needs to come from the top down. And we're seeing this in some organizations. So to give you a bit of a flavor of this, 85 of the FTSE 100 have now linked remuneration to climate targets, which the outline sounds an impressive target, but digging a little deeper into this, most organizations are approaching this quite tentatively in our mind, linking less than 5% of reward to climate targets. So essentially that 5% does need to increase quite staggeringly and making sure that it flows down from top to bottom. And to underline this, whilst the majority of the FTSE 100 have a sustainability plan linked to their wider business strategy, only 28 have clear action plans on the budget and resources needed to make their net zero ambitions actually a reality. So we'd regard it as currently there's essentially a gap between intention and action. Now, I'm sure that that gap will close over time, but it does need the ability of organizations to have less focus on cost and cost pressures attached to that, and essentially the opportunity for better revenue growth, which we'd hope to see as hopefully the macroeconomic environment starts to ease over the coming months, for them to then focus much more on the wider sustainability journey, not least around net zero.
So just picking up on Chris's point around strategy and action, what we are observing in the insurance sector in particular is that the S and the G, so the sort of social and the governance side, we're starting to see more action on those particular areas. But when it comes to E, the environmental element of it, that's where it's still around strategy and the understanding the impact of environment and of nature in terms of the impact on what's being insured, but also the impact of insurers then sort of on the broader market is still being worked through. So we're seeing a number of insurers then collaborating with nature-based organizations to support their thinking in this space. So when it comes to action, I think that will be something that we start to see down the road, but there's definitely more traction in the S and the G.
Yeah, both of you, lots of really interesting things in there. Christine, just swapping to you now, as we sort of get close to wrapping up, what should people be thinking about as to what they can do next to help their own organizations? We've covered a lot of areas in there, but if you can narrow it down to three specifically.
Sure. I've picked up on the points that Chris has mentioned, actually. So I think the first one would be around governance and skills within the organization. I think it's imperative that organizations set up a governance structure that allow them to have the conversations where they can balance the commercial needs of the business and the strategy with then the public commitments around climate and trust. That will also then obviously help to unlock value in the organization. I think at the moment, there's sometimes a disconnect in language in the business between sustainability and some of the front end office parts of the business. And actually having upskilling where required and having a common language, I think will help with some of this. I think the second point is around the taking action. And for me, that's around creating meaningful transition plans. I've reviewed a lot of the transition plans in the sector and they really do differ in terms of detail. And you can see the organizations that have invested in those transition plans, they've got a much better understanding on the risk exposure of their organization. They're really clear where they need to collaborate across the industry, and they understand the immediate challenges that they're facing, which provides a much clearer pathway for them around the actions that they need to take. And then finally, which I don't think we've touched on as much during this conversation, it would be around the sort of data KPIs and the sort of reporting side of things. Some organizations haven't started this yet and are also nervous to publish some of their KPIs, particularly if they're not necessarily telling a positive story at this particular point in time. The leading organizations have started this journey, and there's a current acceptance in the market that you can put data out there with a story of the trajectory that you're moving on as an organization, and a level of confidence around the data and a level of completion. And that's currently accepted in the market. I think people shouldn't underestimate the effort that's required to understand what data is needed, to gather it, the quality that it will be when you first get it, and how you improve that so that you do feel comfortable to report it. I really wouldn't recommend people wait because it takes a while. And finally, if I can squeeze one more in terms of, I know you said the top three, leverage the skills of the organization as is. You know, one leading organization, their finance team have really lent into the data challenge. They are used to producing assured data for financial disclosure. Use the finance teams, use the risk teams. Be really clear where those key skills are in the organization and where the responsibilities should sit to create the right outcome for the organization as a whole.
Yeah, Christine, I really like that last part in there around, you know, back in this coalition of the willing, or coalition anyway, of your finance department. I mean, yes, they're very good on data. They're also very good on being rigorous about, is that data correct, and knowing how to present it in ways that are effective. Lots of reasons in there. And ultimately, this is a personal journey for individuals, and whether it's in the finance department or elsewhere. I mean, both as you and Chris epitomize, it's something that you personally feel very passionate about. And there are many people in the organization. I think when things are difficult, we should all take heart in the fact that there are people out there. Listen, we covered an awful lot in there, and you've got the report as well, which is brilliant. Is there anything else from either of you that we wanted to add in just before we wrap up that we haven't covered or I haven't asked you about already?
I don't think there's anything new to cover. I think the key here is collaboration. We've never experienced a challenge of this scale before in any industry. And therefore, in order to achieve this, we need to collaborate. And that's difficult because we know how organizations operate in silos. We know how sectors operate in silos, and we know how nations do. This is going to be a huge challenge. And that's where let's start collaborating, I think, is the key piece, really, to just reinforce from the discussion.
Christine, collaboration, absolutely. And I talk a lot about either what's been happening in the world of InsurTech, where in the battle between the disruptors and the collaborators and the insurers, you know, the collaborators and the insurers have won, the disruptors, there's a role for disruptors, but it's really all about collaboration. Before we just wrap up, I just want to call out and say thank you, actually, to your colleagues in PwC. We're running another event, private, invitation only, or contact us if you're in this area, but it's the investors in insurance. So all the organizations that have got investor parts of their business, we get together, have a few drinks. That's on March the 19th, and delighted to be supported by PwC for that. And anybody who feels they're eligible, let us know and we'll see if we can get you in. Finally, though, Christine and Chris, be great to know where people can go to find more, and if they need to contact you directly, how do they do that?
Yeah, I mean, by all means, do take a look at our website. Also, please do follow us on LinkedIn. We're both posting lots of related content on this. Matthew, it's been great to chat with you this morning. It's great to debate this topic with you. And I think essentially we're at the foothills of this journey, and it's now a matter of shifting from ambition and intention towards action.
So as Chris just mentioned, we've got a wealth of information on the website. It is sorted by sector. So if you go on to PwC Sustainability, have a look at the insurance sector, you'll see our latest thought leadership there. And I would welcome any sort of interactions or comments from people on LinkedIn, and I'm happy to follow up with messages there as well. Thank you, Matthew.
Well, Chris, Christine, thank you very much. Really appreciate that. I learned a lot, which is always a good sign. I'm sure our audience will have learned a lot. And I know you've got a lot going on, so I'll let you get back to the rest of your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, if you need help sharing your stories to the world, or you just want to understand what is happening in the technology that's empowering insurance today, particularly some of the stuff that's working and what's happening in the future, then you might benefit from the work we're doing. Now, you can get a lot free from the website, www.instech.co, but if you really want to get the full benefit of what we're offering, then you should speak to us about membership, hello@instech.co, or you can contact me, Matthew Grant, via LinkedIn. That's it. We're done.